The first independent move I made in my devotional service up to now, which was for the last 8 years as a full-time devotee and probably 10 years altogether, was to leave Dallas and ultimately leave Chicago as well for the UK against the wishes of Tamal Krishna Maharaj. I didn't agree with the guru system at the time, the Acharya system, and I felt that Goswami Maharaj's dealings, while could be sweeter than sugar, were also too hot to handle. And in this instance, his dealings, like the other 10 appointed Acharyas, or at least we thought that they were exclusively appointed Acharyas at that time, were not making reasonable demands of their godbrothers, but rather unreasonable demands. And it was that was just too much. When Goswami Maharaj first came to Chicago, then my request to him was that since I hadn't had much association with Srila Prabhupada, I wanted him to train me in the way that Srila Prabhupada had trained him. And he did so in many ways at that time, and then following this whole epic when we again made up. But this type of divergence from the real path of Krishna consciousness, or at least the way in which Srila Prabhupada envisaged Krishna consciousness should be spread and practiced, passed on to successive generations, wasn't part of the teachings that I had envisaged, or that later turned out to be teachings that were actually appropriate. In other words, they were not. It was not appropriate for godbrothers to treat their guru godbrothers as their spiritual masters, although they could, but it shouldn't be legislated. It was too much for practicing devotees to immediately accept the kind of worship that Srila Prabhupada had accepted when he was present with us. In fact, it was just not possible to follow Srila Prabhupada as a template in terms of worship, respect, veneration, when the proportionate Krishna conscious realization was not present. I was disappointed and discouraged, and perhaps it was the first time in my Krishna consciousness that my faith and confidence in the system or in the institution was shaken. And when I went to England, unfortunately, that faith in ISKCON was even shaken further. I always have been and still am what you can call a company man. For me, ISKCON is everything. I've given my whole life to the society, and generally for full-time preachers, full-time devotees, my rule of thumb is that ISKCON comes first and the individual comes second. And when I went to England, then once again I were entered into a situation in which the local acharya was in very serious spiritual difficulty. Literally speaking, as I walked into England, the GBC guru, who was Jaitirtha Das Adhikari at the time, was falling off the Vyasa sign in quote-unquote ecstasy. As later it would turn out, that ecstasy was induced by taking LSD, which somehow or another Jaitirtha felt impelled to take. And playing the role of the spiritual master, he felt that he didn't have the kind of realization or spiritual advancement for which all of his followers were turning to him for. and therefore he somehow or another incredibly reverted to his previous habit of taking intoxication and trying to induce spiritual visions through such illusory material means, and obviously with disastrous results. When I arrived in England, I was taken to Chaitanya College, and as I mentioned, I walked into the temple room in which Srimad Bhagavatam class, combination of Jayatirthas combined with Jayatirthas ecstatic kirtans, had just ended, and that was something like 12:30 in the afternoon. And Jayatirtha had just gotten up off the floor after having fallen off the Vyasasan. After a day or two of this, in which I was really startled to even see such a thing, I was left, Jayatirtha left me in the UK and went off to America, as the GBC were calling him to answer for the type of ecstatic symptoms that he was displaying. I only heard what happened over there, but the long and short of it was that Jayatirtha accepted the renounced order of life and came back to England some week or 2 weeks later as a sannyasi. However, his sannyas didn't last very long, as within a short period of time he was engaged in an illicit affair with one of ladies in the temple, and he then left for India. Indeed, he went to one of the Gaudiya Math temples, and there was given shelter by Srila Prabhupada's god brother. For me, this was a real bursting of the bubble. I was seeing deviations in ISKCON. This one was really a major deviation. Fallen sannyasis, drugs, induced ecstasy, illicit sex. And needless to say, that it was clear that the gurus were fallible. They were sadhakas, sincere devotees whom Srila Prabhupada saw as his most senior men who'd done great service for him. But by asking them to take the role of spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada didn't zap them, impart to them some immediate transcendental realization, but rather he gave them an opportunity to come up to the standard of becoming a Mahabhagwat, as Srila Prabhupada was. Unfortunately, disciples always want to see their gurus automatically in the position of Mahabhagwat, and many devotees, even the gurus' godbrothers at that time, they also thought that these devotees had been empowered by Srila Prabhupada with some special spiritual potency, and therefore to be worshipped on the same level as his divine grace. Within the immediate years following Srila Prabhupada's departure, this became blatantly untrue, proven to be untrue, and many devotees became disenchanted both by the treatment that they had received from these senior devotees in terms of the type of respect that they were demanding, as well as the consequence that were caused as a result of these gurus' mistakes, deviations, or fall downs. In other words, ISKCON was being shaken and fruits of the ISKCON tree were falling to the ground. Without going too much further into the Jayatirtha era, but to summarize, by associating with Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, Jayatirtha ultimately distanced himself from ISKCON, and there was a split between many of he and his disciples and the society. The UK was really decimated. Although in time, Jaitirtha continued to recommend drug-induced ecstasy. Many of his followers came back into active service in ISKCON. And it was a horrible wake-up call to us all when some years later there was newspaper headlines in which one of Jaitirtha's most fanatic followers had, literally speaking, beheaded him. It was a very, very unfortunate end to an unfortunate story about a devotee who was actually a very wonderful person, but who, by the misunderstandings and step-by-step deviations from Krishna consciousness, ended in such a disastrous situation. And that wasn't the end of the story. The next GBC and guru who came to the UK was Bhagwan. And that Bhagwan era continued between 1982 and 1986. During this time, I was the president of, I'd become the president of Chaitanya College, as well as leader of the National Sankirtan Party. And because of the complete, or the loss of, in the beginning, as many as 120 devotees, in order to maintain the British Yatra, devotees began to sell paintings. There was a period of 3 to 4 years in the British Yatra's history where devotees didn't have the immediate luxury of selling books, but they had to go out and be businessmen and just sell paintings and bring in profit. That gradually brought the British Yatra a certain level of financial stability, although the rest of Europe was still propping it up with regular infusions of cash. Bhagwan was also a very talented and gifted leader. However, his quality of pride and attachment to luxury really turned his head, especially when there was unlimited recognition given by hundreds and maybe thousands of disciples and a great degree of opulence which was coming in as a result of the successful preaching, Sankirtan book distribution that was going on throughout all of Europe, from Italy, France, Spain, Benelux, and then the UK. He, you could say, was sometimes very Machiavellian in his dealings with devotees, although I must admit that in his heyday he was a very expert leader and I learned many things from him. However, he too fell victim of wealth, women, pride, and many will say offenses to his godbrothers, and of course to Srila Prabhupada for posturing on the same level as his divine grace. And the end result of that was that in the fall of 1986, he ran away with another woman. These experiences were extremely trying for me, and of course I mean by that they were trying on my faith in authority, in leadership. I found myself with all of these individuals in a dichotomy. One is Srila Prabhupada always wanted his devotees to support their authorities, and the other is that when one's natural Krishna conscious instincts tells one that there's a deviation, when to stop following and when to stop supporting a deviant or someone who's going off. And of course, communicating with senior devotees, advanced devotees, people in high position is difficult. It's difficult for followers to get the courage to come out and speak, lest they be kicked out, marginalized, branded as apparatis. And it's very difficult for those leaders to also hear in the proper way that they can actually save themselves and be free from the touch of Maya, which is becoming more and more obviously the poison that's destroying their spiritual lives. So on one side I'm supposed to support authorities, on the other I'm supposed to speak up and correct people who are going off very difficult, even though I had the opportunity, the unfortunate opportunity to get practice in this by the repetition of these incidents. I never lost faith in Srila Prabhupada. I never lost faith in the institution or the system, but I was convinced that ISKCON had to take a different course than it was taking. And with the guru reform that began in 1986, ISKCON was taking a different course, although I wasn't necessarily convinced that that course that was being taken was the best one or was the real remedy for the problems that ailed us. And furthermore, the stability that I had in identifying as a member of ISKCON was very much shaken. In Srila Prabhupada's time, it was very clear what ISKCON was, because ISKCON was identifiable with Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada was rock solid. Then there were many other devotees who were serving Srila Prabhupada, and sometimes these devotees also had difficulties. It isn't that fall downs were a new thing in the society, but still there was Srila Prabhupada as the beacon, as the rock of Gibraltar, and there was nothing that would change that. Now, although Srila Prabhupada was certainly present in his Vani, he wasn't present in his Vapu. He wasn't present to tell Jayatirtha what was wrong, to straighten out Bhagwan, to correct the other senior devotees and their misbehavior, and the GBC body. The GBC body, which was meant to be the rock that would continue in Srila Prabhupada's absence, didn't seem to be doing that very same thing. And thus, in the absence of such an anchor, I was obviously, I would hold on wherever it went, but this was really a different experience of being a member of a spiritual organization than I had with Srila Prabhupada. And of course, that was not just my experience, but the experience of many, many devotees. And that is what made generating enthusiasm, inspiration amongst the devotees of the British Yatra, who had seen two GBCs and two gurus, many of them who are now being initiated for the third time, fall down, and to ask them to have faith, go forward, and rest assured that the same thing wouldn't happen to them wasn't something that you could just demand. It had to come naturally. It had to come by patience. It had to come by the natural growth of their own faith. And once faith is broken, it's much more difficult to then mend and have it grow naturally again. We'll continue with that tomorrow. Hare Krishna.